24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today. It is our eternal guide, our goal to produce content that will keep you awake long enough to learn a little bit about that part of entrepreneurship. And then we study every single part of the mosaic and get a big, big picture for you to look at with our own little version of a thesis that you don't have to go take a bunch of risk, you don't have to be creative, and you can reserve passion for the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and the bedroom, and that that model of low risk, low creativity, copy from somebody else, that model seems to work out pretty well and have more successful five-year going ventures. You know, my favorite example is cousin, Joey here at our family, who started a bar with $5,000. And then they came in across the street and put in a new bar with all of the brass brewing equipment in the three-story lobby with all of the big bats and all of that. Spent $3-4 million to get it open and went out of business 9 months later. And Joey's dump in the wall bar is still open decades later with no improvements. It's still as much of a dump as he did it. So copied, very little risk. And the passion came later when he, started buying other places in the neighborhood. Anyway, that is what we are doing here. Always trying to provide a new slice on some part of entrepreneurship. We have had so many different business models come on the show, and we work really hard to keep the index good for you and the search strong so that you can actually find the articles and the interviews that are apropos for you. Today, first up, we have Pat Alakua on the show. He is going to talk about turning obstacles into opportunity, which is one of my absolute favorite topics. I do just love that topic. He is also going to play the Quick 10, which is our little game show, and we'll see if I am winning another Tesla or not. I sure hope I do. Seems like a really small percentage of the Teslas that I win in this game actually arrive and show up at my door. We'll have to address that part of the system. And then Bob Berg is with us. This is a repeat interview. Our server died with all of our old greatest hits, and so we had to put it up on a new server. It was a financial death, not a tech death, and it made no sense for us to transfer the old files financially. So we're reloading some of the great interviews. And while we do that, we might as well share them with you. Bob Berg was the author of the Go Giver series, which became one of the best business selling series of all time. And you will see why when you hear Bob. He is unbelievable. And one more reminder, please go buy the book. Go buy the book. What's it called? Real Environmentalist, arguing that we are not going to die from the environment. You know, we may have an asteroid hit or something have you heard of this I3 Alpha, which is a asteroid that's coming towards us that has changed course, which means that how does an asteroid change course? That's scary. But anyway, buy the book, Real Environmentalist. It shows that the environment is being addressed by entrepreneurs and argues that entrepreneurs will be the group that save the world's environment. And so it's a very upbeat, positive, happy book. There are 5 stories in there that show entrepreneurs that are making amazing contributions to the environment right now. They are all for profit. They are focused on making revenue, not getting in People magazine, or winning silly awards. And so this is an incredible upbeat book. I'd really appreciate it if you bought it now in the pre-sale category time. It's only $2.99 on Kindle. Real Environmentalist. We'll be right back with a great show.
School for Startups Radio hopes you will reach out to us if you have any questions or comments, or if you need help with your business at any stage, from concepts to exit. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn. He tweets from @entrepreneurjim, and he responds to emails at james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. Very excited to introduce my first guest today. Please welcome Pat Alakwa to the show. He is a very successful business strategist and coach here in the Atlanta area. He helps leaders navigate growth and scale. He is the CEO and founder of Business Growth Strategist. Oh, is that the name of the company? I don't think so. Help me, Pat.
I guess that's just what you call me. Yeah, that
Blue
works.
Blue Magnet Partners is the name of the company. And the book that he has just released, it's 5-star rated, called Obstacles to Opportunity, Transforming Business Challenges into Triumphs. Pat, welcome. Sorry I got the name wrong.
No worries, Jim. No worries. I just really appreciate you inviting me on, and I'm looking forward to the conversations.
Likewise. So, tell us about the book. Why Obstacles to Opportunity? Where did that phrase come from for you?
I guess, Jim, that phrase was, you know, I think in building a business, as you well know, there's just so many challenges that you face, and you never stop. You know, it's a change management process, so you never stop facing challenges. So, as I look back on my career, I found that there were so many people along the way that helped me, get past the landmines. And so I wrote the book in a way to say, you know, here's some insights. I included some many other leaders that have been successful, talking about some of the ways that they overcame their obstacles and challenges. And so in that, what I wanted to do is just sort of have some accessible content for those that are building their own businesses or building your own careers on maybe where they could go quickly and get some insights and get some tips to try to address some of the obstacles they're facing in their career or in growing their business so that they can reach those opportunities I think we all strive for, right?
What are the big obstacles that people face? Are there some generic buckets that are fairly common?
Yes, I believe. When I look at it, I term it the entrepreneur to enterprise pathway, right? And I look at it like there's sort of five things I look at, Jim. It's first is, you know, recognizing customer needs, and all these aren't necessarily at startup, right? They can change at different, that they can apply at different points of the journey, but I'll give them in sequence. It's the recognizing customer needs, right? Where you got to figure out, am I the right fit? What do they need? And what am I offering? And then you go through that. Hopefully you start to grow a little bit, and those challenges are, how do you manage the resource stretch? That naturally comes when you can't scale the hustle anymore, right? So you start having to focus on stretching resources. And then, you know, you move into that systems phase, right? People often call it the professional management phase. I like to call it sort of a blend between that entrepreneurial drive that has to stay, but yet you got to start adding a little more structure and systems in the process. And then you start having to adapt to your culture, right? It was sort of like it just sort of happened in the early goings, but as you add more people, as you grow, you got to be more intentional about your culture. And then I think, you know, such a big one is, you know, you got to always anticipate what's next, right? What are the future challenges? And in that, I always say you got to have one foot in the present and one foot in the future. And when we're working in our business, it's often hard to figure out, you know, how do we work on it, right? So in that, while we're in it with one foot in today, how do we anticipate sort of what's coming next, and how do we prepare to scale? And that's what I sort of call that one foot in the future. So I think there's the five main things are, you know, customer needs, stretch, systems, culture, and always being anticipating what's coming around the corner.
All right. Great list. I love it. When you see this, when a new client walks in, do they have any idea what their obstacle is, or are they blind to it? Kind of like my baldness. You need two mirrors to see it.
Yeah. Great question. You know, I think they're feeling what you often say right here, the obstacles or the growing pains within the business. And you can talk to them about some of those things. Right. But getting them to really focus on root causes to address those are another thing, right? And you know, because they're sort of feeling the growing pains at points, and the growing pains come from success, right, Jim? With all your experience, I know you get this. It's not necessarily failure. It's things like there's not enough hours in the day, right? There's, you know, we're spending time putting out fires, right? There's, you know, maybe there's a lack of understanding of people in the organization and where it's going and what their role is in it, right? And one of the biggest things is what I believe is recognizing that what got you here isn't necessarily going to get you to that next level. But how do you distinguish between not throwing the baby out with the wash, because there's a lot of good stuff that got you there, right? And how do you, you know, and what do you adjust and pivot with and change to get to that next level? So a lot of times there's, you know, they see some of the symptoms, but, you know, getting to sort of zoom out and slow down and say, okay, what really do we got to do right now in order to get rid of those symptoms? Because, you know, it's and it's challenging sometimes, because if you haven't been through growing that business and through the transformations that we all have to make when we're growing a business, at every growth stage, we have to make that personal transition. And we really have to first look in that mirror and say, a lot of times it's us, right, as a leader in growth.
Oh, it's always me, Pat. That's what sucks about it. The mistakes are always me, it seems. So, you know, I didn't realize this until someone told it to me, that your career goes as high as your ability set goes. And when your abilities tap out is when your career stalls. And so it seems to always be me that's the problem. When you have an obstacle, do most people get disappointed, upset, or do a lot of people realize that, you know, a good problem is the impetus many, many, many times for greatness? And my favorite example, I've used it before, is the American Art Museum. I'm not getting the exact name. It's part of the Smithsonian. It's right there, the closest museum to the Capitol. And the reason that the lot was vacant is it's a 19 degree angle and no architect wanted to build anything there, but they gave I.M. Pei the opportunity and he built a masterpiece there based on the 19 degree angle. Everything that 19 degree angle was the glue that held the entire design together. You know, so he used that obstacle as a great, great opportunity to succeed and create a masterful building. Do people realize that, or is that a blind spot for everybody?
Well, you know, I think we're all wired in some ways. We're different, but in many ways we're the same. And I think, you know, when you're in the middle of it, sometimes it's hard to see that pony in the dung, if you will, right? As the old saying goes. And so I think it is, because they're looking at, okay, you know, they're stuck, you know, and they might be overthinking things and they just can't get unstuck, right? But you know, what I always try to do is just as we all try is give perspective that says, okay, you know, how do we just get, how do we just take that next step? Okay. And when you take that next step, all of a sudden, you know, you you get unstuck, you start looking forward through the windshield. Right. And if you get enough wins, I think all of our confidence starts to build and we start saying, okay, this obstacle is another opportunity to grow. And I think what I learned, Jim, is that, you know, in the process, I would get stuck in that obstacle and I'd look at it as negative because I was an overthinker. You know, I thought, you know, a perfectionist, and I beat myself up at times. So how do I do this? How do we do this better? But when, you know, early on, I was able to focus on, you know, looking at always being curious, right? And saying, okay, how do I really learn from this? And I think when you get enough wins, you start to turn that corner. But I just think it's in the way we're wired. And I don't think we, you know, there's some of us that are very forward looking, and there's some of us that I think will naturally get caught in that obstacle. But I think as experience comes along, as confidence builds, it's a lot easier to say that obstacle is just the next opportunity for growth or for whatever it is that I'm going after. But I think that sort of comes with life's process and maturing and facing enough of those obstacles and overcoming them. And I think we learn our way through that, if that makes sense.
It does. It's like a confidence snowball, you know, baby steps that eventually give you confidence in a more macro sense, if that makes any sense at all. So I love the illusion of the snowball. All right, Pat. Very, very interesting. Switching gears a little bit, how did you build this business? How did you build, Blue Magnet Partners. How'd you get your first client? How do you establish pedigree in this space where anyone can be a coach or a consultant?
I guess for me, the journey started with my own businesses, right? Multiple businesses before Blue Magnet. And then what I started looking at was I enjoyed my own businesses. I still do, obviously, what I do with Blue Magnet. But what I found was that my definition of success started changing, and it was less about what I did, and it was more about how can I take those things that I learned and still feel the emotions of those obstacles, right, and those challenges of building a business, and how do I help others get from A to B faster, right? You know, just as others had helped me. So I made that switch, and what Blue Magnet really became was a way to start formalizing for me how I went out and helped others on their journey versus, you know, my ultimate journey is just lifelong learning, right? So I started that journey, and I still do it today because of, while I'm helping others now, what I'm actually doing is feeding, you know, selfishly, I'm also feeding my own desire to continue to learn, because if I'm working with the right people, you know, I never want to be the smartest one at the table. And by smart, I mean, I've got a lot of experiences that I can help others with, but I'm always looking for people that have different experiences than I do, so that while I'm helping them, I'm continuing my own journey of learning, and they're teaching me as much as I hopefully am adding value to them.
That is so true, that you do learn a lot from hoping or coaching, helping other people. I've always found that true. So can you tell us one of the recent clients, what happened? Walk us through just a client case without necessarily any important names.
Sure. Well, just something, I guess what we just launched a pilot in the sports space where we went in, and there were two gentlemen who are just fabulous at what they do. It's a communications product or it's a communications offering. And they both, you know, that they're, you know, one was a broadcaster. The other person is a speech coach and trainer, for CEOs and C-level executives. And they came together, to offer something in the sports space for training coaches, executives, communication skills. So to make a long story short, Jim, what we did was we helped them organize their message, positioning, and really helped them develop a pilot to go in and start testing the market out at what they were doing together, and launched it recently with a partner who's helping this, if you will, distribute that in the sports space. And it was a great journey, because whether you're just starting out, Jim, or whether you're, you know, offering a new product along the way, one of the things is it's so hard, I've found over and over, was, you know, once you look at that and identify who that target customer is, right? How do you really communicate what it is that you're offering them and why it's different, right? And especially in today's world where there's so much overwhelm. So it was a fun project, because what I love to do is go in and initial smaller entities don't have the funds or the time that the larger ones do to go launch a product, right? So we use the system or a process that helps them create their positioning and create their communications, go out into the market and test it, fine tune it, and then find a partner that can help you with distribution. Because so often it's like you can build the mousetrap, but then how do you get out into that marketplace, right? And reach enough customers to buy it, you know? Because sometimes build it and they will come just doesn't happen. So that was a fun project.
Sounds like it. How do you market these days? How do you get new customers?
At this stage of my career, I am, what I do is mainly word of mouth. I do a lot on social media, just on LinkedIn, Jim, just to share content, because I love the interaction that I can hopefully have, and I do have with people back and forth about some challenges, just even within the LinkedIn platform. But through that, I keep myself relevant in those markets. And then what I have is I speak with, it's really just old networks and referrals. And I'm at the stage of my career where I look more for an opportunity that I really can get excited about, that I can really add value in. And quite frankly, I'm not looking to scale a lot of customers anymore, because I what I'm looking to do is have an impact and I've been fortunate enough not to have to worry about the next customer, if you hear what I'm saying. But it's mainly referral, and I keep relevant in specific in markets through what I do on LinkedIn.
I've met a lot of people in your position who sort of have a boom or bust cycle. They get a lot of marketing done and bring in a lot of clients, and then they're too busy with the clients to do marketing, and then they finish those clients, and then they have no customers because they didn't do marketing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How do we get out of that rut?
Great question. You know, I don't know that there's a great answer to that, quite frankly. It's because it's that solopreneur rut, right, Jim? And in that process is, as you're saying, it's we're busy delivering. So how do we go out and sell at the same time? And I guess what I try to say to people in those situations is if you're fortunate enough to be very busy delivering, focus on some relationships that I'll call them marketing partners or channel partners or people in your niche that are already focusing on some of the same type of customers that you're after, right? And how might you collaborate or partner in some way on the marketing side of things, right? Where one brings in the other, or you bring in that person. And I'm a big proponent of collaboration and creating those kinds of partnerships, because I think not only is it great because it's fun, it's working with other people, but I think it also is a lot more efficient in helping you bring customers, especially when you're so busy and then all of a sudden, okay, now you're not. Now what do you do? Because you just can't go sign a customer tomorrow. I think those collaborative marketing relationships are important.
Very important. Yes, I love that answer. All right, I heard that you were willing to play the Quick 10, our little game.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. I have to ask, by state law, are you currently sober?
Yes, I am. I am. I think my wife would sometimes wonder, even though I hardly drink anymore, but I would say I'm sober. Yes.
All right. Do you want to accept the standard wager?
Okay. What is that?
The bet that everyone else makes.
Okay. I'll take it.
There you go. All right. Number one, your favorite creativity hack.
I would say it is walking and thinking. I think movement brings clarity, Jim.
Number two, favorite bootstrapping trick.
Sell it first, build it second. I think validation beats perfection every time.
All right, number three, name your top passions.
At the top is my family. Growth, I love to figure out how things grow. Clarity, because I love to squeeze ambiguity out of everything. Leadership transformation and systems. I'm an efficiency and execution nut because I think that's what scales.
Number four, the first three steps in starting a business are?
Define the problem, prove the demand, and then design a repeatable system. Don't wait till you have to scale. Start thinking system early.
Number five, the best way to get your first real customer is?
Solve one urgent need and then make the experience just truly unforgettable.
Number six, your dreamiest technology is?
Tech that hides complexity behind simplicity. It just works.
Number six, your dreamiest technology is?
Dreamiest technology is tech that hides complexity behind simplicity. It just works.
Number seven, best entrepreneurial advice.
Growth is not scale. Don't mistake the two. Scale's capacity, not chaos. And start building scale early, okay? Because you run out of hustle at some point, and that sort of is where you get growth from.
Worst entrepreneurial mistake, number eight.
Mistaking hustle for structure. It sort of works until it doesn't, until it breaks.
All right. Number nine, favorite entrepreneur and why?
Reed Hastings. He reinvented Netflix, Jim, before the market forced him. You know, you always do that comparison, Netflix to Blockbuster, right? And his, you know, he had vision with courage, and he got it. He stayed ahead of the market.
And finally, number 10, favorite superhero.
I would say Batman. I think about him because no powers, just preparation. And I think that's what real leadership is. You sort of win with discipline, not magic.
All right. Great answers. While we calculate the score and find out the winner of our wager, please tell us how to get in touch with you, get a copy of the book, all of that stuff, please.
Thanks for asking, Jim. I guess my website is patalacqua.com, PatAlacqua.com. So you can find the book there. Of course, it's on Amazon And there's some free stuff on the website, some things about my frameworks and my system. So hopefully, you know, everyone will check that out. And I think that's the easiest place to go. Aside from LinkedIn, look at just Paddle Aqua on LinkedIn. And I love to connect and talk with people there.
Fantastic. Great stuff. And congratulations on the book. It is 5-star rated. Oh, Pat. Oh, I am so sorry for you. I just got your score. You got a 94, a 94. It's an excellent score, but you have to have a 95 to win the wager. So you owe me a Tesla.
Okay. All right. Does it matter which model, Jim, or what?
No, just any nice Tesla.
Okay, I hear you.
Thanks a lot for being with us, and we'd love to have you back. And since we live so close, we should go have a beverage.
Absolutely. I look forward to that, Jim, truly, okay?
Likewise.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You were great, and we'll be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Again, thank you so much for being with us today. I am incredibly honored and excited to welcome back to the show the very famous Bob Berg. He is one of those people that just doesn't need an introduction. He is one of the best-selling business training, sales training authors of the last 3 decades. His book, The Go-Giver, went to number 6 on the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list. Just after 3 weeks of publication, it reached number 9 on Business Week. And since then, it has been in the top 25 continuously ever since then. It's been translated into 21 languages and has sold over 500,000 copies, making it one of the best-selling business books of all time. And just recently, it came out in a new edition, a new expanded edition. And you may remember that his co-author, John David Mann, was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Mr. Berg, welcome back to the show. How are you doing today? It is our honor.
Hey, Jim, the honor's mine. Always a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for those very kind words.
Well, it's an amazing career, absolutely amazing. I'd like to start right there. How did you get started? How early in your life did you realize that you were going to be a little bit more successful than your peers, a little bit more successful than the other kids you went to school with? What set you apart at the absolute earliest?
Well, actually, I don't know how much more successful I am than people I grew up with, because there are actually a few people who did great. They probably have bypassed me in certain areas. I think with me, it was always more a concern if I was going to be more successful than I was at present. And I never knew, or at times I never knew if that was going to happen or not. Because I think, like anyone else, there were a lot of failures along the way and a lot of discouragement. And you kind of find a way to work through them and hopefully things come out. But the speaking really happened by accident in a way. Well, not accident, but through a series of situations that occurred. I began in broadcasting and moved very quickly over into sales, where once I learned a system for being able to sell effectively, I kind of progressed in that regard, became sales manager of a company, and then attended a seminar where I ended up selling that person's tape. Back then, this is, you know, 35 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever. So we're talking about tapes, not CDs or anything. And I began, they taught me how to, you know, speak at different groups, clubs, organizations. I'd speak for free, and then I'd sell their tapes, their tape program at the end. And I kind of had a knack for that, again, once I learned a system for doing so, and then began little by little breaking out on my own, teaching my own information and topics. And that's sort of how it morphed into speaking. So then it was a matter of learning how to set up and run a successful speaking business. So one of the themes that runs throughout that, perhaps, is that at a certain point, I realized that I really wasn't smart enough to invent my own systems, but I could learn systems that were out there and apply those successfully in my own life. And I think that was really a key for me when I realized not only did I not have to reinvent the wheel, trying to do so was only going to hold me back.
But that has changed. At some point, you were able to come up with your own incredible content. The Go-Giver wasn't something that you copied, borrowed, or stole from somebody else.
Right. No, it wasn't. It wasn't content I couldn't come up with. No, I've been able to do that. It was systems for running a business.
Oh, okay.
In other words, systems for selling, systems for marketing, systems for once I decided to become a professional speaker. Okay, how do you go about marketing and selling yourself as a speaker? So no, the first content when I was selling for someone else, which is something many people do, you know, I had the rights to sell that person's content, and they taught me how, and that was fine. That was a win-win for all of us. But no, eventually I began my own intellectual properties, if you will, and that was when I began talking about networking and relationship building and winning without intimidation, which was really just people skills, and then eventually the Go-Giver, which John David Mann and I teamed up on. So no, I've been creating content, creating and co-creating content for 25 years, but learning business systems is what I understood I needed to be able to do.
How important is an incredible memory to being a great salesperson? Your first book was called The Memory System, about how to have a better memory and remember people's names, and the very important Bill Clintonian ability to remember people 20 years later and what you ate when you were sitting there talking to them and what their wife's name was. How important is that to your incredible ability to be a salesman?
Oh, it's very, very important. And the reason I began teaching it is because first I began learning it because I had a terrible memory. And really, it's not that terrible memory, but an untrained memory. And the results are the same. Whether it's untrained or just terrible, the results are the same. So I had actually taken a memory course because I, as a salesperson, that was something that really held me back. And once I learned, and again, there was a system for it. And, you know, you hear me talk about systems a lot. And I personally define a system as the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. In other words, if it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired result of B, then you know that all you need to do is A and continue to do A, and you'll eventually get the results of B, again, if it's been proven. So I learned a memory system. And it made a dramatic difference for me. I mean, in terms of self-confidence, in terms of effectiveness, in terms of how liked and respected I was because I could remember others. Because remember, when it comes down to it, it's always about the other person. It's never about us. And so as I started to get good at that, and I began, and those were the person's tapes that I started to sell, and then I began to develop my own programming. But I found that was a big boon for me. It's something that's helped me through the years, and it's something I've really become known for, that people are surprised in an audience when we meet before the program or sometime, or I'm able to call out people by name and so forth. So yeah, it's huge.
And another thing that I'm hearing is a lifelong pursuit of continual learning. You graduated from school, but yet you still went out there and took classes on sales and developing systems and how to perfect your own memory. How important has been to your career, to what you do, to be the guy that's always still continuing to make yourself a better person?
Yeah, well, my learning really began after formal schooling because I was a horrible student. I always say that I was accepted into college. It was a very small college. I was accepted into college on academic probation. And I kind of joke and say, that part was true. Then I kind of joke and say, well, I also graduated on academic probation. So, and the only reason that's not true is I think once you graduate, you just graduate. But it was by the skin of my teeth, both high school and college. But what's interesting is once I got into sales, that's when I started to realize, that's when I discovered the world of personal development. Because really, when you think about it, sales is about understanding people. It's about understanding others. It's about understanding ourselves. And I was introduced to this amazing new world that I just totally embraced. I think the first book I read was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and then How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, and The Magic of Thinking Big by Dr. David Schwartz, and Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Bye. And all of a sudden, I'm just loving this continual learning and can feel myself growing on the inside, which is really what needs to happen before it manifests on the outside.
To become a great salesperson, let's go back, I guess, to some of your early books where you focused on sales and building leads. And you have your second book was Endless Referrals. How can my entrepreneur listeners today work on their sales techniques? Give us some steps that we should do to get out there and become better salespeople. So many entrepreneurs are great coders, great programmers, very original thinkers, but they have no idea how important sales is going to be to their career. Talk to them.
Right. And Michael Gerber in his E-Myth series calls people like that technicians. In other words, they are just absolutely great at their core competency. They are fantastic. And yet they have sort of a resistance, if you will, to the selling and marketing process as though that shouldn't be a part of the business. Well, it is. It is a part of the business. So you do need to know how to sell yourself, and you need to know how to sell your products and services. So it's something to definitely work on. There are great books out there on the topic. And whether you start with people that I started with, Zig Ziglar, his books, and Tom Hopkins, timeless wisdom in terms of sales. And, today there are people like Jill Conrath and Jeff Gittimer. And I'll tell you, he's coming out with a new book soon, his first book, and I'm so glad because to me, he is the go-to person right now when it comes to sales. His name is Anthony Iannarino, spelled I-A-N-N-A-R-I-N-O. And he has a blog called The Sales Blog. And it is absolutely, it's to me, it's a not miss. And, so I think there's people that, so my suggestion would be look up those people who have mastered the craft, who've mastered the art, and who have written about it, and who are teaching about it, and learn from them. Here's the interesting thing. And I always say this when it comes to authenticity. Learn from everyone, learn from these people, adapt their wisdom, but don't adopt their personalities. stay yourself. So in other words, learn their wisdom, absolutely, but don't try to be them. Don't try to sell like them. Don't use their personalities. Stay yourself, but just understand there is a skill set involved, and it's very important to understand that.
Let's talk about The Go-Giver. Congratulations on the new version and the incredible success that book has had. Talk to us.
Thank you.
Tell us briefly what the fable is about and how you came up with this idea. How over any number of years the concept of giving first came to you and how you learned how important and valuable that could be.
Sure. And it's a business parable. It's a story about a guy named Joe who's a young, up-and-coming, aggressive entrepreneur, salesperson, actually, with really great potential. But his focus is in the wrong place. It's kind of all about him. It's about his quotas, and it's about who owes what to him, and it's about what he needs to do. And what happens is he meets a mentor by the name of Pindar and some other people who Pindar introduces himself to over the course of a week, and he comes to learn a very, very, very valuable lesson, and that is that shifting your focus, and this is the key, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. And that doing so is not only a nice way to live life, but a very financially profitable way as well. Why? Because no one's going to buy from you because you want them to, or because you need the money, or because you have a quota, or because you know you have the best product or service out there. They're only going to buy from you. They're only going to do business with you because they believe that doing so is more beneficial to them than not doing so. And what that tells us in a very logical, rational way is that your focus must be on pleasing them, on communicating value to them in a way that they see it as being of value. That's the key. And this is why we say that money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means the value must come first, and the money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you provide.
And was it autobiographical in some sense? You know, was this something that you learned through time? Did you have certain experiences that made you realize this?
Well, you know, when I was first starting out in sales, let's put it this way, when I was first starting to get my legs out from under me and I was starting to do well, but it was still off and on. And I think my focus was in the wrong place. It was a gentleman who I met only one time. He was a retiring guy, and I think he saw me as an up-and-comer who really needed to have a shift in focus. And he took me aside one time, and he said, "Berg, if you want to make a lot of money in business, if you want to make a lot of money in sales," he said, "don't have making money as your target. Your target is serving others or serving your customers." He said, "Now, when you hit the target, you'll get a reward. The reward will be money, and you can do with that money whatever you'd like. But never forget, the money itself is only the reward for hitting the target. It's not the target itself. Your target is serving others." Well, that has a lot to do with our first law, the law of value, which says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment, which means nothing more than that the experience you provide for that person based on focusing on their needs, their wants, their desires, has got to be so exceptional that they're happy to trade their money for that value. And when you do that, they profit and you profit. And so, you know, it's things like that that were part of my life. And of course, John was a very successful entrepreneur. So when we came together on this project, the five laws were built around those things that he and I had both studied, had both learned, and both had applied in our own individual businesses.
All right. So law number one is the law of value. Can you walk us through the remaining four laws?
Sure. The law of compensation says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So it's not just a matter of providing great value to one person. You've also got to impact the lives of many others. Hence the importance of a referral-based business and developing what one of the mentors in the story told Joe is an army of personal walking ambassadors. They help you expand your reach. Law number three is the law of influence, which says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, when we say place other people's interests first, this doesn't mean you should be a doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Absolutely not at all. But as Joe learned in the story, the golden rule of business is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you and others than by, as Sam, one of the mentors, told Joe, stepping outside yourself, moving from an I focus to an other focus, making your win about the other person's win. And then you've got the law of authenticity, which was shared by Deborah Davenport, one of the mentors, and that simply says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. That means that you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month. People know who they're working with. They know who they're talking to. And you begin to develop a reputation among people as someone of high integrity and high character. And people know who you are and what you stand for. And then there's law number five, the law of receptivity, which says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. This means that while it's important to breathe out, we also must breathe in. Giving and receiving work together. They're simply two sides of the very same coin. And while we need to focus on the giving of value, we need to focus on the giving, we also need to allow the receiving.
When John was on the show a couple of weeks ago, we had an interesting conversation about how this philosophy has changed the business at the Chamber of Commerce coffee meeting level. That when you walk into a Chamber of Commerce today, there's the guy who sells tchotchkes for a living. He sells frisbees and pens, corporate ID, corporate junk, right? You know, the paperweight that you give away to your customer, the calendar that the insurance man gives you at the beginning of the year. And that man has heard your message and comes up to you and says, "How can I help you today?"
And you know that he's trying to sell you a pen with your logo on it, and that there's probably no way he can help you. But you also understand that he's trying really hard. How should you respond to that person? You know that there's really nothing that they can do. They're selling you pens. You don't need any pens right now, but they're trying so hard to give back. How do you respond?
Well, I would more carry on the conversation with him and or her in a way that shows my genuine interest in them. I might tell them, I appreciate your offer. It's not something I need at this time. But then I'd ask them about themselves. How did you get started in this business? This looks very interesting. And now they're a little taken by surprise because people don't usually ask them that. And they realize that they feel pretty good about being asked how they got started in their business. And then you might ask them, what do you enjoy most about what you do? You must have had some great experiences, helped a lot of people. And again, they feel great about that. And wow, this person's asking some great questions and so forth. And then you ask what I call the one key question, which is, how can I know if someone I'm speaking with would be a good prospect for you? And they're really taken aback. But what you're doing is you're teaching this person. You're teaching this person that to the degree you can take your focus off yourself and not just try to hit someone up for business, but instead begin to cultivate a relationship, that's the degree people are going to be attracted to you. That's the degree people are going to want to get to know you better. So, yeah, a lot of the chambers now are using the book and, suggesting it to people. And because, again, it's about a shift in focus. It's realizing that when you take your focus off yourself, you're much more likely to have other people interested in you. Why? Because when you're genuinely interested in others, and this is something key, the single greatest people skill, because we know how important people skills are, the single greatest people skill is a highly developed and authentic interest in the other person. And when that's the case, people will bend over backwards and go out of their way to be a part of your life when they can tell that you genuinely are interested in them.
I think that the best takeaway I heard right there, Bob, was the ultimate question, as you called it, how do I know if I'm speaking to someone that would be a good referral for you? I think that's the best thing that you could give to a pen salesman is teach me how to find great clients for you. That's a very hard question for them to answer, though, isn't it?
It depends. It shouldn't be, but it often is because they haven't really thought about it. What they'll do is start telling you about the product or service itself, which isn't the important part, but rather how to identify someone. For example, if you were talking to a person who sells copying machines, and you ask them, how can I know someone I'm speaking with would be a good prospect for you or a good referral for you? If they start telling you about why the copying machine works so well, that does nothing in terms of helping you help that person. But if they say, well, if you're ever in an office and you notice a copying machine, and next to that copying machine is a waste paper basket, and that waste paper basket's filled to the rim and overflowing with crumpled up pieces of paper, that's a really good sign that copying machine's been breaking down a lot lately, and that would be an excellent prospect for me. So now they've helped us identify someone who might be a good prospect.
Well, great advice. Bob, how can we get a copy of the book, follow you on social media, connect with you, all of that kind of thing, please?
You know, really, Jim, everything is at burg.com, and they can go there. They can subscribe to my Influence and Success Insights, get the chapter one of The Go-Giver, and connect with me on the various social media. It's all pretty much right there at burg.com.
Fantastic. Bob, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for this book. I think it really has changed business in America, and my listeners would be stupid not to spend some time over the holidays reading it. Thanks a lot, sir.
Well, I appreciate you greatly.
We are out of time, but back tomorrow. Be safe, take care, and go make $1 million. Bye now.